I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is March 16, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Chair Hansen is present. Wasilik, Amy.
Wasilik, present.
Heintzeman, Josh.
Present.
Acom, Patty.
Present.
Ackland, Susan.
Present.
Backer, Jeff. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Present.
Ackland, Rob.
Present.
Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, present.
Green, Steve. Igo, Spencer.
Present.
Jordan, Sydney.
Present.
Keeler, Heather.
Present.
Lee, Fu.
Lee, present.
Lippert, Todd.
Present.
Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, present.
Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, present.
Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, present.
Tice, Tama.
Tice, present.
And then to go back, Backer, Jeff. And Green, Steve. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Friday, March 12, 2021. Representative Fisher, have you looked over the minutes?
Yes, Chair Hansen, I've looked over the minutes. I'd like to move approval of the minutes from March 12, 2021 for approval.
Representative Fisher moves the minutes for March 12, 2021. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Members, we have several bills today, and Vice Chair Wozlawick will be chairing much of the meeting, as I have a bill up in another committee. But we're going to start this afternoon with Representative Richardson's House File 836, Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust Account Money, and we have allotted about 20 minutes for this. So, Representative Richardson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 836, did you want to move?
Yeah, let me move. I will move that House File 836 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Richardson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 836 would require the Commissioner of Management and Budget prior to the end of fiscal year 2022 to transfer $13,905,000 from the general fund to the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Account to restore the remediation fund to address money transferred from the account previously. The contingency fund was set up for emergency response for immediate threats at landfills and to pay the cost of long-term care at sites that have been closed properly for 3 decades. There are currently 7 landfills that remain eligible for the contingency account, including the Pine Bend Landfill and the Burnsville Landfill in Dakota County, both of which are open and currently operating, along with 4 closed demolition landfills and the Pig's Eye Landfill. There are current concerns about the viability of the contingency fund. Projected revenues and forecasts point to the need for a significant increase in the fund to ensure remedial actions are able to be conducted without interruption, as expenses are projected to be more than the account balance within the next 3 fiscal years. This bill takes a step forward to restore funds transferred out of the account to address the short-term issues and concerns. Today, I have with me Dakota County Commissioner Slavik and Matt Massman to testify. We also have George Fisher, Director of Environmental Services with Dakota County, available for technical questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Slavik, welcome, and state your name and who you're with for the record.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mike Slavik. I am a Dakota County Commissioner, and as Representative Richardson had said, Dakota County is of the 7 landfills in the Minnesota Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust. 2 of them are in Dakota County, and they happen to be the only 2 that are currently active and contributing to this trust fund. That contributes about $800,000 with expenses of roughly $1.2 million So the interest earnings plus the revenue generated is what is covering the expenses right now for this fund. As was stated, between 2004 and 2015, roughly $22 million was transferred out of this fund to help other budget needs. Some of that was put back into the fund. However, just under $14 million is still remaining that was borrowed to the state general fund and not placed back into the landfill account. And what this bill is asking for is, and which we do support, is putting that money in so that it may help increase the interest bearings to be able to help for remediation of the 7 landfills in the metropolitan area that will ultimately be closed at some point. The last thing that I'll just say is, as we are all well aware, landfills are permanent. They are an environmental risk that never goes away, and to have the proceeds returned into this trust fund are very valuable to be able to help with offsetting some of the costs, which will cost more, to be able to make sure that the landfills are maintained and taken care of once they are closed. With that, I either am open for further questions, or I know there are other testifiers. Otherwise, thank you for your time.
We'll go through the other testifiers first. Matt Mossman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Matt Mossman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, which includes 15 of Minnesota's larger and faster growing counties, including 4 in the suburban area and 11 greater Minnesota counties. Thank you, Chair Richardson, for carrying this legislation, and Chair Hansen for hearing the bill and for your past championship in support of the bill as well. Chair Richardson and Commissioner Slavik really captured the essence of the bill and its importance, and we've submitted a fact sheet for committee members as well. So I'll just touch on a few points really and be brief. You know, when this fund was created back in the early 80s, 1984, it really reflected the proactive foresight of policymakers, understanding that these closed landfills were going to pose a significant long-term public health and environmental risk that would eventually require substantial post-care costs to maintain and need that in perpetuity. And so what happened was a small amount of money, or a moderate amount of money, was put in with the intention that it would grow such that when the landfills started to need the money, as they do now, those funds would be available. And what happened along the way in difficult budget times of the state general fund budget, some of those monies were moved out with the intent that they be repaid, and that never happened for the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust. So that was not an uncommon practice necessarily across the state budget, but certainly most of those have been restored, and a few of those are important, obviously, to do so still yet, as this money is needed increasingly. So I just wanted to underscore that point. And for those, it is also a statewide issue. There's another fund that had a similar history where much of that money was repaid, but some remained. So we strongly urge the money to be restored to the Metropolitan, the MILCAT fund here, and also just underscore that the costs are really starting to set in and be significant, as was referred to the MPCA's most recent study on this fund estimates more than $65 million will be required to complete the needed monitoring and response actions of these funds through these landfills through 2049, and that does not even include the 2 landfills that remain open, as Commissioner Slavik said. So those are my comments. Happy to stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 836. The Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust, as you've heard, was created in 1984 by the legislature to provide funding for care and post-closure care at mixed municipal landfills in the 7 county metro. So as you've heard, there are 5 closed and 2 open landfills, 2 each in Hennepin and Ramsey counties, and 3 in Dakota County. Mr. Chair, a lot of my testimony has already been said. I will just note again that the long-term need for this program is in the neighborhood of $65 million, not including Pine Bend and Burnsville landfills. So there is definitely a need for these funds, and this bill will ensure that the needs that we have to implement at these sites in fiscal 22-23 can be met. Mr. Chairman, at that point, I will say this is a fiscal item and not in the governor's budget, but we do support the intent and the goals of this bill and the MILCAT. And we thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Richardson, for this bill. Thanks, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might have been brought up, but just want to absolutely confirm that, and I'm not sure which testifier might be able to best answer this question. So if Representative Richardson has an idea who it might be, that'd be fine. But, you know, so far of the money that was paid back, I'm trying to figure out where that came from. Did it come from the general fund? And this is going back a ways, but of money that has been paid back, has it come from the general fund? Or has it come from the renewable development account?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the department would probably be best able to answer that question.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Heintzman, for your question. So if I'm understanding right, the source of the funds in the MILCAT is the a fee on mixed municipal solid waste landfills that are located in the seven county metro. And that fee is either $66.66 a ton if the landfill is weighing the waste it receives, or $2 a cubic yard if the landfill measures instead by volume. So from that amount, the proceeds go, a quarter of those proceeds go into the MILCAT, as we call it, fund. And the remainder goes into the environmental fund for metropolitan landfill abatement work. So the source is this fee on metropolitan landfills.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman, I think you were asking about the payback. So
yes,
it went maybe into, so the fund went into the general fund, and the payback in the teens came from the general fund. And there's still the amount that in Representative Richardson's bill of 13.9 that has never been paid back, that was from the solid waste fee paid by Metropolitan solid waste fees, and that went into the general fund and was never paid back.
Okay, Mr. Chair, do we have any idea where that is at, like the accounting for it? So I don't think we have any numbers in front of us relative to how much is owed, how much was paid back. It gets very confusing because obviously it seems reasonable that the money that was borrowed from these, or that the accounts that borrowed money from MILCAT would pay the money back. But I understand the money's going back to the general fund. It's just really hard to track where we're at and at what point will we be equal and the fund be made whole again. And if the accounts that borrowed the money in the first place are contributing to paying back into the MILCAT account. So, I mean, it sounds kind of convoluted, but it is complicated. So maybe you can help us understand.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one point that I would make, because the funds were removed from the account initially, there has been a loss on interest that could have accrued. So what we are asking for today doesn't even take into account the interest that was lost on the funds, but it's really more of trying to make whole for the dollars that were removed.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
It doesn't sound like the information is available. If maybe that could be provided to members so we know where we're at, maybe Matt has an answer, but I'm just trying to get at the current status of things as it relates to these accounts.
Representative Heintzman, there's a 40-page report that's posted on the website that the PCA did as part of the 2019 budget deal that provides it in excruciating detail. $13 plus million was taken to balanced the budget in the early 2000s and never paid back from the general fund. And that report is available for the public to look at as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
I appreciate your referencing the materials. It's just still somewhat convoluted, and that's why I asked the question.
Any other questions? Representative Richardson, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present, and I'd also like to thank testifiers as well, Commissioner Slavik, and also Mr. Mossman for testifying as well, and just would ask for support. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. I will renew my motion that House File 836 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, House File 988, a Representative Marquardt, Red River Mediation Agreement implementation funding provided and money appropriated. We anticipate this going till about 1:35, and after that, Vice Chair Wozlawick will take over the chair. I will move that House File 988 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Marquardt, to your bill.
So, well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, or Madam Chair now, I guess. House File 988 would provide an appropriation on this Red River Basin mediation agreement that was done back in 1998, and it would be an appropriation of $264,000 in each of the next 2 years. And usually would match up to like 50% costs of implementation and so forth. So what happened back in 1998, there was a lot of battles over water management and environmental permitting in the Red River Basin. And I'm not privy to everything that happened, but there was a court-ordered mediation that took place in 1998 that involved the Red River Watershed, Watershed Management Board, its member watershed districts, United States Corps of Engineers, and Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And so what this group has done is very important, work together to plan, design, fund, implement flood damage reduction efforts in the Red River Basin. And they leverage funding with federal and local sources. So if you, and I know you do, know the history of the Red River Valley and the flooding and so forth, the state of Minnesota literally has put hundreds of millions of dollars, which we're very grateful, by the way, because it's really made our communities much safer than before. But there's been a lot of investment and a lot of organizations coming too. And I will have to note that the dry winter is always a relief when it comes to this time of the year. When you know you don't have any flooding. So do have Mr. Robert Sipp here, who's the Executive Director of the Red River Watershed Management Board, and he'll have about a three-minute presentation.
Mr. Sipp, welcome, and state your name and who you're with for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Robert Sipp, and I'm the Executive Director of the Red River Watershed Management Board, and I have a very short PowerPoint if I could share my screen, if that'd be okay.
Short.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, here we go. And just making it into the slideshow here. Okay, thank you. So as Representative Marquardt discussed, I won't go into a whole lot of detail here, but the mediation agreement really was a landmark milestone for several local units of government and the federal agencies to really develop consensus and working partnerships on planning, design, and funding for flood damage reduction projects, and also really help coordinate those projects in conjunction with how natural resource enhancements should be implemented as part of these flood control projects. So as a result of all that mediation agreement and discussion, the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group was created, and that actually oversees the mediation agreement, makes decisions annually about the budget of $264,000, and helps decide and determine where support for natural resource enhancements should go and what the different types of funding should be. There's also some more internal workings with technical committees and so forth, but really it's all about advocating and promoting and developing watershed-based approaches and solutions to water and natural resources management. And a little bit on who is involved in the agreement. And so it's the Red Board, local governmental units such as counties and soil water districts, all the state agencies, some of the federal agencies, and then citizens are also represented. And just a note on membership, 9 of the 11 watershed districts up here have actually received funding through the flood work group, regardless of if they're a member of the Red River Watershed Management Board or not. So funding is really spread across the entire Minnesota portion of the Red River Basin. So more so on the funding, this is just a quick snapshot of 2018. And we do match that with, at least for 2018, with $570,000 that comes from the local watershed districts. And a good portion of that funding in 2018, about 65% was for project team support and project acceleration grants. And then you can see that we do some water quality monitoring as well. And so about 32% was used for that activity in 2018. And just real quickly, 2019, real similar, about $502,000 in match, and about 60% going towards project team support, project acceleration grants, and just a slight uptick in the water quality monitoring. So real similar how we spend that funding from year to year. I wanted to mention too, the Red Board is actually the fiscal agent for the flood damage reduction work group. So we're real involved from that standpoint. And then just looking at how do we incorporate NREs into these flood projects? Things like water quality, wetlands, different types of habitat and recreation can be included in these projects, and they are included. And just a quick snapshot on the left there of the North Ottawa flood project in the Boise Sioux Watershed District on the southern end of the valley. And they have quite a few natural resource enhancements included in that project. And then when we look at our flood projects up here, over the years, the Red Board has helped co-fund approximately 60 projects since 1976. We also have 11 flood projects in the works right now. We also have a new water quality program. It's about a year old now. We have 10 water quality projects in the works as well. And then just several other projects in various phases of planning, design, and construction. And that's just one of the flood projects that's just north of Crookston within the Red Lake Watershed District. And then I guess the last slide, just a quick snapshot of the Red River Basin. There's all the watershed districts. Again, 11 watershed districts up here. The color-coded districts are members of the Red Board. And then you'll see that large area of the Otter Tail watershed that is not an organized watershed district. And then there's 21 counties that are up here. So thank you. Really appreciate the time. And I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Teresa Abengea, Region Director 1, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you, Representative Marquardt, for introducing this. My name is Teresa Ebengay. I am the Northwest Region Regional Director for the Department of Natural Resources. Again, thank you so much for introducing this bill. The 1998 mediation agreement is a very important mediation agreement for all the flood damage reduction work group or flood damage reduction projects across the Red River Valley. As the co-chair of the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group, this funding is definitely needed. And again, most, if not all of it, goes directly to project teams within the watershed district for these projects. This past year, the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group has worked really hard on updating the 1998 mediation agreement, and it has created an addendum. We also have a recommitment by all of the state agencies and by the Red River Watershed Management Board to continue to work cooperatively on all of these flood damage reduction projects within the basin. So again, thank you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Backer.
Yes, Chair, thank you. This question is for Mr. Sipp. Representative Green could not be on the call, but one of the things Representative Green and including myself too is wondering, right now it looks like the board is holding on or have in their account roughly $24 million. and I'm not looking for specifics like $1.5 million is for this, but what's the intent of those $24 million that the Red Board is holding on? What's the intent of the use of those funds there, Mr. Sipp? Thank you.
Mr. Sipp or Representative Marquardt?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sipp.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Backer. Yes, we do have those funds in our holdings, and those funds are for flood damage reduction projects, and those funds are all committed. We actually do have funding agreements for all those projects that I mentioned, those 11 flood damage reduction projects, and then also the 10 water quality projects that we have in the works at this point. So that funding is committed for all those projects.
Representative Backer.
So you're saying that the $24 million, those $24 million are committed for flood mitigation projects over the course of the next year or 2 years there, Mr. Sipp?
Mr. Sipp.
Yes, Chair Hansen, Representative Backer. So the projects, as you know, do take some time to build and construct. And just as an example for this year, we have a large project that we will be paying out on up in the Red Lake Watershed District. And so we'll have about $6 million going out the door on a project like that. We have some other smaller projects we'll be paying out. So we're looking at probably paying out $8 to $10 million this year on projects alone. And then the other remainder of the projects and the funds will be in the coming likely 1 to 5 years.
Very good. Thank you.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair and Mr. Sipp. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably another question for Mr. Sipp. I'm hearing some big numbers, and I'm just trying to figure out kind of where you guys are at. And I'm not sure if a brief overview in terms of your budget is in order, but I am curious, in addition to how money is being spent there, you know, we're sitting on, I think you just mentioned $24 million. How much, I mean, there's a lot of need around the state, so I'm just wondering, what are you guys sitting on in terms of a current balance total? Can you really demonstrate the need right now, considering, you know, so many other expenses that the state is looking at funding?
Mr. Sipp.
Yes, Chair Hansen and Representative. So yes, we do have approximately, it's just under $24 million total. And again, the funds that we're looking for today is for, excuse me, it's for the mediation agreement, excuse me, and for the flood damage reduction work group. So we're the fiscal agent for that group. But nonetheless, we do have, like I said, we do have that funding available for our flood projects and our water quality projects. We do have, again, several funding commitments in place that the board is obligated to fund. We have several projects, again, that we're going to be funding this year alone. And so that balance will be drawn down extensively in 2021 that we're anticipating.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
This might be a question for the bill author, but Mr. Sipp, of course, is obviously clear on how things are being done at the Red River. But if this didn't get funded, what would be the impact?
Mr. Sipp, and I did see Representative Marquardt. It looked like he was ready to hop in on anything there, but I'll go with Representative Sipp. Or Mr. Sipp and then Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the impact would be that the funding would not be available for the local project teams to do the work that they need to do to develop these projects. And part of the project or the funding for the flood work group is for project acceleration grants. And some of those funds really help projects move from one phase to the next. That funding would not be available. And earlier I showed a couple pie charts in the presentation. The monitoring would likely not be able to occur. Now again, that's not a real large part of the overall budget each year, but so there would definitely be an impact to the local project teams and the local watershed districts to get projects moving and to develop projects and to really get them through all the phases of design, engineering, and permitting and so on and so forth.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the answer, while at the same time, we're hearing bill after bill after bill this session. There's obviously a lot of need. And some of those presentations include some very specific detail as to what will be accomplished and project acceleration and monitoring. I don't know what that is necessarily, you know, and I know we are at limited time, so I don't mean to pick. I just know that there's still some questions that a lot of folks probably would have. So I'll hang it up there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. Representative Marquardt, any closing comments?
Well, thank you so much. And I initially thought you had turned the chair over to Representative Wasilewicz. That's why I was a little bit confused early. But thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is really important. I mean, you know, you go back to 1997 when Breckenridge was completely flooded. Ada flooded, Grand Forks, East Grand Forks. I mean, and it's been literally hundreds of millions of dollars since then along the Red River. And the coordination that this Red River Watershed Management Board does in coordinating these projects and leveraging these dollars and so forth is vitally important to not only continuing those projects in the Red River Valley, but completing a lot of them. And every time they do a project, we get a little safer and the community gets stronger and better. So appreciate members listening to this bill and appreciate your support.
I will renew my motion that House File 988 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Vice Chair Wasilewicz, ready to take
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep, I will take the virtual gavel here. Next on our agenda is House File 1233, Explore Minnesota Tourism Funding Provided and Money Appropriated. I will move that House File 1233 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Christensen, to the committee, and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe there's an amendment to move.
There is an amendment. Let's do the walkthrough of the bill first, and then we'll take that amendment up after.
Okay, great. Thank you. So, members, one thing we can all agree on is that the tourism industry has suffered significant hits during the COVID-19 pandemic. In fact, the tourism and hospitality industry has been the hardest hit sector in Minnesota's economy. We also know that tourism drives economic activity across Minnesota, employs thousands of my constituents and yours, and is the face of Minnesota. Information from Explore Minnesota shows that travel spending in Minnesota decreased by $7.1 billion, with a B, dollars in 2020. The latest forecast of 2020 international travel to Minnesota shows an 80% year-over-year decrease, with a return to pre-pandemic levels forecast for 2024 or later. Recovery of the tourism industry has been disparate, while some areas of the state saw an uptick of visitors over the summer. The timeline for full recovery of the industry is unknown and likely will take several years. Many areas are still in a deep economic depression and struggling to recover. In the February forecast, MNB reported Minnesota's leisure and hospitality sector lost 123,400 jobs from February to December, resulting in a 44% drop in employment. Job losses in the leisure and hospitality sector disproportionately impact low-income workers, women, and people of color. It's so important that we get the tourism and hospitality industry back to pre-pandemic levels and get people back to work. So I'm excited to present House File 1233 today. The bill will provide grants in four key areas: tourism recovery, meetings and conventions, events assistance, and business cooperative marketing. Each of these grants are one-time appropriations, which will benefit key sectors of the tourism and hospitality industry. 100% of these dollars will directly aid Minnesota's tourism industry. As you know, every dollar invested in tourism results in a return to the state in traveler spending, state and local sales tax revenues, and job creation. House File 1233 will provide the needed catalyst to restart the economic engine of tourism and bring hospitality employees back to work. You have two letters of support in your packets, one from Minnesota Festivals and Events Association, and one co-signed by the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition, Minnesota Association of Convention and Visitors Association, and the Community of Minnesota Resorts and Hospitality Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members, as you put together your budget bill in the next few weeks, I hope you will include funding for recovery of the tourism and hospitality industry. I would like to turn it over to my testifiers, starting with Megan Christensen, but perhaps we want to move the amendment first, Madam Chair.
We can move the amendment. We'll do that. Actually, we're going to hear from those folks first, and then we'll do the amendment right after that.
Okay.
So we'll take Ms. Christensen, if you want to introduce yourself for the record, and then present your testimony.
Christensen with Visit Grand Rapids. Thank you so much, representatives, for letting me speak on the behalf of this bill. Greater Minnesota encompasses small to medium-sized destination marketing organizations, or otherwise known as convention visitor bureaus. We represent diverse Minnesota destinations from 1,000 Grand Lakes to Prairie Lands and everything in between. We are primarily small communities with populations in size of a couple thousand to tens of thousands. We market and promote our regions to attract visitors to our specific locations within Minnesota. Tourism is tens of thousands of dollars to our local economies. 2020 was a tough year for destination marketing organizations. All of our budgets were impacted by COVID-19. Most of us are down anywhere from 25% to 60%. We have greatly benefited from past emergency grant opportunities. Grant opportunities help us stretch the income we receive from our local options lodging tax. Through these funds, we would be able to try new technology-focused marketing and conduct additional advertising to attract new visitors in 2021 and 2022. For destination marketing organizations to receive additional emergency marketing grants, we would require the legislature to increase the Explore Minnesota tourism budget. We desperately need additional funding opportunities to help us make up the decrease from last year and the unknown tourism environment we are about to experience this year. Emergency funding would allow us to have strong marketing campaigns to attract new visitors to our greater Minnesota communities. I thank you for your consideration to increase Explore Minnesota tourism budget through new marketing grant opportunities to help us with downfall in tourism economy due to COVID-19.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Next on our list is Sarah Pasek, if you want to introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Pasek, and I'm representing the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1233. As Representative Christensen mentioned, you have a letter of support in your packet signed by a coalition of tourism organizations, all supporting this bill. I will be speaking specifically about the funding request for the Meetings and Conventions Grants Program and the Events Assistance Grant Program. Meetings, conventions, events, and festivals are key drivers of Minnesota's tourism economy and hotel stays. During the pandemic, hotel occupancy in Minnesota hit historic lows. Hotel revenue was down 48.5% statewide during the past year, and other regional areas saw even steeper declines, with Minneapolis hotel revenue being down 82.7%, Bloomington was down 66.3%, and St. Cloud was down 49.1%. The impact is much greater than just lodging. It reaches into convention centers, meeting venues, and businesses across communities that support this industry. Meetings and conventions bring a significant amount of revenue to the state and local community. Meeting attendees often spend a lot more money in a community than a leisure traveler because often they're on a business expense account. The local restaurants, bars, shops, and other entertainment venues all benefit, and they have all suffered significantly during the pandemic. Meetings and conventions also put people to work. We know that hospitality and tourism unemployment has surpassed all other sectors over the past year. Business travel introduces people to a community that they otherwise may not have visited, and they discover a place to return to with their families. Minnesota has a peak tourism season, and meetings and conventions help to fill up the calendar and offer stability for hotels, convention centers, and other venues. On the events assistance grant request, over 2,500 events and festivals typically happen in a year. The loss of these events has been felt in every corner of the state. These activities were the first to shut down and will be the last to fully return. For most of the year, events were 100% canceled with no phased reopening. The impact of these losses has been devastating. In your packet, you have a letter from the Minnesota Festivals and Events Association. Please take a look at that letter. It lists the many ancillary organizations and companies that make events happen and depend on events to survive. Among these businesses are tent and portable structure services, staging, recycling, security, catering, temporary restrooms, and more. During the past year, many of these industries have had a 50 to 100% income loss. Madam Chair and members, thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. As Representative Christensen stated earlier, 100% of these one-time appropriation requests will go directly to grantees. No dollars will be used for administrative expenses. Thank you for supporting and considering this request, and thank you for your past support of tourism.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Mike Schweiders. If you want to introduce yourself for the record and then present your testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is Mike Schweiders. I'm from Boyd Lodge up in Cross Lake, Minnesota, and I represent the Community of Minnesota Resorts. Community of Minnesota Resorts is a resort-based organization that represents approximately 180 resorts in the state of Minnesota, most of which are less than 10 cabins. And I'd like to speak about the Business Cooperative Marketing Program and how it affects them. Many of these are mom-and-pop, all of these are mom-and-pop type resorts that their budgets for marketing are not thousands of dollars, but literally hundreds. And some of these programs that are available through the cooperative program, through EMP, for example, they can advertise in the Iowa Sportsman for as little as $285, they can get an ad placement there. Without that program, there's that same ad costs them over $1,000, and they're able to reach out to markets that they would never be able to touch as well. And some of our members don't even have marketing budgets, and the Community of Minnesota Resorts is really their sole source. Since I've been on the board since 2010, we have utilized their cooperative grant program every year. We've done things such as web development, print ads, spot television programs that we've been able to advertise in prime markets, online banner ads. And without that program, the cost is too prohibitive that we are unable to do any of those. We have utilized all the different programs that the Explore Minnesota Tourism has provided, and they've been just an absolute wonderful partner to work with. And quite honestly, as we said, it's not just the resorts that benefit from that, but it's the local, the bait shops, the ice cream shop in town. It's the restaurants that are really struggling in our area where I personally am located. This brings people into the communities that will spend money here, and the return, as Representative Christensen said earlier, is, you know, $8, $9, $10 to one that's spent that we get back. So it is vitally important to our members and also those in our communities as well. We'll fully understand budgets are extremely tight, and we really appreciate your support on this because it does make a difference. It's not an expense. It actually is an investment that does offer a return down the road. So again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak here today, and thank you again for the time.
Thank you for your testimony. We are going to take the amendment next, and then we'll move to member questions if there are any after that. I understand that Representative Eklund has the A2 amendment. Representative Eklund, do you want to explain that? Do you want to move the amendment and then explain it briefly for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A2 amendment. Madam Chair, members, the A2 amendment is to appropriate from the general fund $250,000 to Explore Minnesota for a grant to the Grand Portage Band up in Grand Portage, Minnesota. Most of you, if you've gone up Highway 61, you realize Grand Portage is right before you cross into the Canadian border. And this past year, as you've heard, Madam Chair members, all these resorts have struggled this past year. Grand Portage has probably struggled worse because 93% of their business is Canadian customers. So that is the reason for the amendment, to help them bridge their payroll to get through till hopefully the border opens soon. Thank you, Madam Chair members.
Representative Eklund moves the A2 amendment. Representative Christensen, did you have any comments on the amendment?
Thanks. Thank you, Representative Eklund. Yeah, this is a good amendment. I accept it, and I thank him for recognizing the unique need that they do have up there. You know, the fact that they're on an international border and that we have closed borders has had a tremendous impact on the area. So I thank Rep. Eklund for bringing the amendment forward.
All right. We'll take a vote on the amendment. All those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. With the bill as amended, we will take member questions if there are any. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if anyone from Explore Minnesota Tourism is here today.
Representative Sarah Pisick could answer questions, I believe, for you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman, go ahead with your question and we'll see if one of the folks who's here can answer it.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I doubt that anyone can answer this one specifically. I think that most of what we see coming from Explore Minnesota Tourism is really good. And as Mike and others mentioned, we see a return on that investment, and it's something that we can track and is significant. And I think really helps to justify the expense promoting Minnesota. I do have a question for the bill author, though, as it relates to the spending that occurred in the 2020 cycle. And I'm trying to figure out if there was money saved. As everyone listening today knows, Governor Walz shut down Minnesota's tourism industry in 2020 due to COVID. And there's a great debate as to what should or should not have been shut down as compared to other states and so on and so forth. And just putting that debate aside, my question would be, did Explore Minnesota Tourism spend their money as they normally would have, promoting Minnesota and inviting people to come even while we were closed? And then if they didn't, how much money was saved? Does anybody have an answer to that question? And I don't think, you know, being as Explore Minnesota didn't show up today or wasn't able to attend today, there's probably no way to answer that question, but I'm hoping the representative offering the bill might know.
I will throw that out to Representative Christensen and see if someone else might be able to help with that answer. Otherwise, we can certainly get that information.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Rep. Heintzman, thanks for that. I'm going to see if Sarah Pisick can answer your questions.
I see her hand up, so we'll go to Ms. Pisick.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Heintzman. You're correct that Explore Minnesota would be the organization, the state agency, to answer your question. But I do know that as they were doing less marketing to drive tourists to Minnesota, they did redirect some of their funds into a crisis grant program during 2020. And so they made some crisis grants available to organizations during the past year that they found within their existing budget, their past biennium's budget. And I'll pass, you know, I'm sure they're watching. We can pass along their question to you to get back to you with, and the committee, with specifics on how they used their budget over the past year.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any reason why, and this is a question for Representative Christensen, is there a reason why Explore Minnesota couldn't come in today to help answer some of these questions?
Representative Christensen, no. I don't know if you can answer that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, there's not a specific reason. I guess I thought that we had a good coalition here to talk about the benefits of the program. So, but I'm certainly willing to get you whatever information you need, and the committee, the rest of the committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Representative Christensen is absolutely right. There is no question about our coalition supporting Export Minnesota Tourism. I'm co-author on the bill. I completely agree that there's support for this bill. I do think, though, that Explore Minnesota should definitely be here today to explain where things have landed as going through the last 12 months has obviously impacted tourism around the state. And, you know, it kind of leaves a question mark in my mind. And that's why I'm asking the question, and I'm fairly disappointed. They've been here previously, if my recollection serves, and you know, it's just a disappointment that they're not here to visit with us directly. So thank you for offering the bill, Representative Christensen. I appreciate that. And I guess we'll have opportunity to ask questions again later at another time.
All right, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do want to just clarify that this isn't their ongoing funding bill for Explore Minnesota, but this is a combination of four different buckets of one-time appropriations. And I do remember when we had Explore Minnesota in this committee earlier this year, I believe the testimony from Mr. Edmond was actually that those most impacted by the pandemic had actually been the businesses and tourism more in the metro area, whereas the rural areas, although there were impacts, that there were actually some places where folks were doing better with internal tourism coming in, you know, folks from the suburbs driving up to different parts of the state and you know, choosing to do their outdoor recreation in-state instead of going out of state or flying elsewhere. So, I can't speak to obviously to why Explore Minnesota isn't here today, but I know we did have that testimony earlier this year. And finally, just want to thank Representative Eklund for his amendment and Representative Christensen for this bill. It's a good bill, and I know that it's greatly appreciated by the businesses throughout the state. And not everybody can rely on Representative Eklund to give them advice on where to stay and where to go fishing when they go up north. So really important to have this option available for folks.
Any other member questions here? Not seeing any hands. Representative Christensen, closing remarks.
Okay, I would just like to thank everyone. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to my testifiers, and thank you, members. This is a good bill. You know, our hospitality industry has suffered, and, you know, I'm proud to carry the bill and to help them out any way that we can. So thanks so much.
I will renew my motion that House File 1233, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Next on the agenda, we have House File 1799, Lower Minnesota River Watershed District Funding Provided and Money Appropriated. I will move that House File 1799 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And Representative Mason, welcome to the committee. Looking for... There she is.
Hello.
Mason, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
By people purchasing it in the assumptions, DPS is assuming about 100 of these plates would be issued a year.
We can hear you, Representative Mason. Go ahead.
Is that okay?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair Wasler. And members, House File 1799 appropriates funds. Oh, did you want to move the bill first?
Yep, I'm ahead of you there, Rep. Mason. I've already moved the bill, so you're good to describe.
Okay, I missed that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Let me get back then. House File 1799 appropriates funds to the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District. It's $480,000 over the biennium, and it's from the Board of Soil and Water Resources for a grant to the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District to defray the cost of maintenance and operating sites for dredge spoil. And for those of you that have been on the river, you'll know what that's all about. To sustain the state, national, and international commercial and recreational navigation on the lower Minnesota River. I also wanted to say this is basically an incredible treasure, both as far as economic and recreational uses. For recreation, there's fishing, there's boating, and there's also the floodplain, which provides over 20,000 acres of regional parks and open spaces, including the Minnesota Valley National Refuge. And for the economy,
Representative Mason, I just want to. We were getting some background noise. I don't know if you have the radio on. Can you just
okay? Let me put that off. Okay, I'm trying to be two places at one time.
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead and continue.
Okay. For the economy, there is a channel that goes 15 miles upstream, and it provides the lowest cost of transportation available, both for, especially for agricultural products, as well as other commodities. And what I'd like to do now is ask Linda Loomis to give you some more details on this.
All right, Ms. Loomis, if you would identify yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Yes, my name is Linda Loomis, and I am the administrator of the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, and I'd like to thank Representative Mason and the committee here for listening to us today. As Representative Mason pointed out, this is a bill to help the Watershed District manage dredge material. The Lower Minnesota River Watershed District is somewhat unique in the state, as we are the only watershed district with responsibility for helping to maintain navigation in the state of Minnesota. We are the local sponsor with the Corps of Engineers to keep the navigation channel open on the Minnesota River up to the city of Savage, where we serve grain terminals and aggregate industries and fertilizer industries. So it's very important to the state in that the majority of the agricultural products grown in the Minnesota River Basin leave the state for international markets through the ports of Savage. And fertilizer for those same agricultural fields comes in through there too. Road salt also is another big product that gets shipped on the river. So we are responsible for managing the material that is dredged from the river. We don't like to call them spoils anymore because that implies that it's something that's not good. And we just call it dredge material because it can be reused, which is what we do with the material. Once it's dredged from the main channel, we let it dry out on a site that we own in the city of Savage, right on the river, where the material is placed after being dredged. It dries out, and then we find an end use for it, either as construction fill or recently some of the material has been taken to agricultural lands and placed on there. We also work with the private terminal owners in Savage that have to maintain their barge slips, which continually are filling up with sediment. And in order to load the barges to full depth, they have to dredge the material out of their barge slips, and they place it on our dredge site to let it dry there too before going out to its final resting place. We continue to see increasing amounts of sediment, both from the main channel and also from the private dredge barge slips. It's a combination of increasing artificial drainage, both suburban, urban, and agricultural drainage. And climate change, which is increasing the rainfall that we see. And that erodes the riverbanks, it erodes all of the valleys and the tributaries that feed the Minnesota River, and it ends up getting deposited in the Minnesota River Valley, and then we end up having to manage the material as we dredge it from the river. So that's what this funding is used for, and I guess if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Loomis. Next up, we have Kevin Bogalke. You could introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kevin Bogalke. I'm the Assistant Director for Regional Operations with the Board of Wine and Soil Resources. And just real briefly, this funding and this appropriation has been in the Bowser base the last two biennium. And we work closely with the Watershed District to allocate those funds from the legislature and the appropriation to the Watershed District for their for the purposes that are stated. And we are able to do that again should this be continued. Thank you.
Thank you. Any member questions? Representative Heintzman.
Yeah, I think that the testimony that we just heard mentioned that the causations that are cited include a number of different categories. I'm wondering if when we are talking about agriculture and climate and city, and you know, as you're breaking that down, do we have a ballpark idea how much each of those categories contributes to the additional sediment that we're seeing?
I will see if Ms. Loomis can maybe help us. I know she had brought up that in her testimony, Ms. Loomis, or someone else.
Yes, Representative Heintzman, I don't have the exact numbers. I do know that from some monitoring that we've done with the Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Geological Survey, we're finding that there is about 1 million tons of sediment that ends up being deposited in the Minnesota River Valley between the city of Jordan and its confluence with the Mississippi River. And most of that, you know, they measure the sediment in Jordan and they measure it at Fort Snelling, and they find out that there's about 1 million tons of sediment less by the time it reaches the Mississippi River. And it's so that all is coming from outside of the metro area, basically, because our, you know, Jordan is pretty much the beginning, kind of the demarcation between the urban and the rural sections of the Minnesota River. We did do some work with the Freshwater Society that found that a Minnesota River, basically upstream of Jordan, they're losing about 80 acres of land a year. And most of that is because of agricultural drainage and the increase in the rainfall that, you know, the two of them combined just tend to erode the rivers faster. Plus the fact that it happens during rainfalls, so you get that flushing event. You know, if it was a more even flow that happened all year, there would probably be some kind of equilibrium established. But as it is right now, those peak flows and flashy events is what's creating a lot of the erosion. So as far as the exact number, I don't know that I can give that to you, but that's some of the information that we've looked at.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, it'd be, I think, prudent to do some more work trying to figure out what the actual sources are. It's anecdotal, it sounds like, at the moment. It'd be great if we could have some more data to really confirm and get at what's driving erosion that's producing these sediments. And then, you know, I'm not going to pretend sitting here in my office that I know what that research would look like, but I'm sure there's a hydrologist somewhere, some folks in a University of Minnesota office that could likely put together something if it hasn't already been done, especially as it relates maybe to maybe some specific problem areas like what we're seeing here. And I hope that the discussion of dredging continues to be a more positive word, because dredging can be a very good tool to help restore lost recreational value and also It's important to Minnesota's economy. So, you know, that shouldn't be something. I think that as we were discussing it earlier, it sounded like there might be some controversy there, but it shouldn't be. And I'm glad that, you know, there are solutions to try to open up areas where we've lost those values. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to ask the question.
Ms. Loomis.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heintzman, there has been some work done in the Greater Blue Earth River Basin conducted by the University Water Resource Center and a group out of the University of Utah by Dr. Peter Wilcox, and I'd be very happy to share that information with you or to sit down with you one-on-one if you'd care to learn more about some of this.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
I'm actually aware of the research that you're mentioning. I was more interested in specifically learning about this area and if we have identified the sources. That's why I asked.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Loomis. Representative Fisher, you had your hand up. Did you still have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a little bit more of a comment is, you know, we're hearing that the intensive rainfalls that are coming through are causing more and more problems. This kind of goes back to some solutions that we've heard over the last couple of weeks of doing more focused on trying to hold water back on the landscape in the upper Minnesota River Valley. I do know that we do have some bills that have been heard on the committee, and I would hope that our colleagues would be more than happy to support those efforts so that we can help start solving this problem upstream instead of having to spend all the money downstream the way we are. Thank you.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a brief comment and something that I've noticed in our area in St. Cloud, Wake Park, the whole area. Several years ago, we used some monies that were given from President Obama in adding more complete streets to our city in the area. And I remember on County Road 137, they drained a swamp and put in, I think it, in some places, it's 5 lanes with bike trails and sidewalks. And now we've got a water superhighway. And I wonder if anyone has ever done any work to figure out how much more water we see racing down after these harder rains, because we've put concrete and tar in so many areas that once used to be just wetlands. I would be interested in seeing that. And does anyone know if there's any research or things to do with that?
Not sure if anyone can answer that question, but I'll leave it open for a second here if someone has any thoughts to share on that. Don't see anyone jumping up with an answer here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just, if somebody knows any answer somewhere, it would be really nice to see what that is.
Thank you, Representative Tice. I don't see any other member questions at this point. So Representative Mason, we'll let you have closing remarks to your bill here. Representative Mason, you'll have to unmute yourself.
Thank you very much for the discussion. We obviously know that this stretch of the Minnesota River is incredibly important to us. And for those of you who haven't had a chance, to take the ride down from the Port of Savage into St. Paul, it's, you know, it's an incredible sight to see. I mean, because basically on 13, we're looking at all kinds of busy stuff. And when you're along the river, there is so much greenery, et cetera, that we're probably not taking advantage of. But I did want to make one point. I remember this goes back a few years, when we were trying to figure out some of the contamination of the river, what was found out is that virtually all of it comes from outside the watershed district. So there's not a whole lot that can be done within the watershed district. It's mainly trying to fix the problems that are outside the district. Again, this is so important, both from recreational and commercial agricultural means. So I really appreciate your support. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Mason. I will renew my motion that House File 1799 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Next up, we have House File 32. electric assisted bicycle classification and regulation modified. I will move that House File 32 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. I believe this is Representative Elkins.
Yes, thank you, Madam.
Welcome to the committee and tell us about your bill.
Yeah, we're getting additional upgrades in the types of e-bicycles that are being introduced. And so this creates a three-tier system. And Dorian Grilly from the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota is going to do most of the bill presentation. But we're adapting to advances in electric bicycles. So if Mr. Grilly is here, there he is.
Mr. Grilly, if you would identify yourself for the record and please proceed with your testimony.
I unmute myself. Chair Wasilewicz, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the executive director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. A quick summary of House File 32 would be that Section 1 of the bill clarifies that e-bikes are not motorcycles or off-road vehicles or motor vehicles. Section 5 outlines the three-class system, with Class 1 being what is currently defined as an electric-assisted bicycle, which operates with pedal assist up to 20 miles an hour. Class 2 bikes do not require pedal assist and can go up to 20 miles an hour. And Class 3 bikes require pedal assist and can go up to 28 miles an hour. They require a speedometer to be included on the bike. And Section 11 updates the riding rules and regulations related to this system and would allow the trail authorities to regulate Class 3 bikes since they go quite a bit faster. And several years ago, I came before the legislature asking to update the definitions in Chapter 169 to make e-bikes under a certain power threshold that went under 20 miles an hour bicycles, not motor vehicles. Until then, they were required license and being insured. And today, thanks to Representative Elkins and others, I'm here to simply ask that you make this update that will make Minnesota statutes consistent with the evolution of e-bikes, the rules and regulations in other states and countries, the current national and international manufacturing standards, and what is going out the door at bike shops statewide. The Transportation Committee heard from the bike industry a couple weeks ago that e-bike sales have been growing 100% a year for the last several years, and that they estimate $65 million in sales this year in Minnesota alone. That number would generate about a little less than $4 million in sales tax revenue. So it's a significant number. BikeMN worked to draft this bill with the National Bike Industry Coalition called People for Bikes, and Matt Moore, the general counsel at Quality Bicycle Products in Bloomington, the largest wholesaler of bicycle parts in the country. For this committee, I'd like to share BikeMN's thoughts on the fiscal note and the reason that we're here before you today. It says that there'll be a minor cost of about $25,000 to the DNR and possibly other trail providers for updating their signs and management. I don't disagree with DNR's concerns and appreciate their willingness to work towards a solution. And I think you'll hear from Andrew Korsberg from the DNR in a minute. And my thought is that this bill does not make major changes to the current operating rules, and that the sign updating and replacement could be done as part of DNR's normal replacement process. But that still leaves the management questions about the 28 mile an hour bikes. But lastly, I'd like to leave you with a thought that e-bike sales have been a significant boost for bike shops statewide, and that they are becoming very popular with baby boomers, the very people that are driving the significant portion of our tourism economy and the use of our state trails. So I was listening in before, and I think we all realize that we need to get people back out visiting our communities and our resorts and our trails. The average cost of an e-bike is pretty significant. And I'm just hoping that $4 million in sales tax revenue could be used by this committee to compensate DNR for those management costs of $25,000.
Thank you, Mr. Grilley. We do have Andrew Korsberg here to answer questions if members have questions. So we'll turn it over to folks if there are any questions from members. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lewick and I have been very fortunate to have the opportunity to actually operate these electric bikes, assisted, I guess is maybe the term. And over in Cuyuna, it's absolutely exploding. Representative Elkins, I'm glad you're bringing the bill forward. I think it's super important that e-bikes are included as a bike in statutory definition. And these categories, I think, are really going to go a long ways towards making sure that e-bikes continue to have a bright future in Minnesota. And I'm glad we're catching up to a number of other states that have already done this. Wanted to make those comments and then point something out. And this is going to be more controversial and doesn't have anything to do necessarily with this bill. But of course, these are not inexpensive. And there's an ongoing debate in Minnesota as to how we fund some of these projects, like the one in Cuyuna or in locations around the state, trails coming through our communities from border to border to border. And at some point, that conversation is probably going to have to include how do bicyclists pay their own way, especially considering the significant cost of these vehicles. We're not talking about a cheap ride necessarily. In some cases, an e-bike can be more than even a motorcycle. So I think the definitions make sense. I'm glad we're doing this, as I said a minute ago, but I think that it also is gonna be a continuing interest in the conversation as to how do we maintain our sport for those of us that spend a lot of time on bike trails and complexes like at the Crosby Cuyuna location. So thank you for the opportunity to make a few comments and appreciate the bill.
Thank you.
Any other member questions or comments? Not seeing any hands show up, so Representative Elkins, we'll give you the last word here.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for your consideration today. The bill will be being laid over for the fiscal note, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. But this is an important bill. It's a safety issue. It's important that the proper signage be erected, the rules of the road for these vehicles be disseminated. So I urge you to vote. Well, actually, we won't be voting. We'll just be laying it over. So thank you very much.
And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 32 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. We don't have any other further business before us as a committee. So with that, we will adjourn.